folks said that I would change my mind. I'd straighten up and do just fine. Ah, but I still love rock and roll. I keep on rolling with the flow.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5, 34 minutes after the hour on this Thursday morning. Thank you very much for listening. 251-343-0106. Hit us up on that text line. So to come, Secretary of Labor Fitzgerald Washington. That's in the 11 o'clock hour, so please stick around for that. But joining us now, very pleased to bring on my next guest, friend of the program, friend of yours truly, Congressman Mo Brooks of the 5th Congressional District, running for U.S. Senate in Alabama. Good morning, Congressman. How are you?
Doing great, Jeff. I'm up on Capitol Hill, just working away.
I guess there's the worst places to be, but I can't think of any off the top of my head, the Capitol Hill. But let's get right into it. I guess first off, the question I want to ask, campaign going okay so far?
Yeah, it's going great. Scary good. I wish the election were today.
Yeah, well, you'd probably be running away with it. But things, they picked up in a hurry very, very early. This seems to be a rather frantic phase of the campaign cycle, this very early stages. But this thing seemed to be kind of settling back down a little bit. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, it's a long haul. It's about 11 months between now and Election Day. Most of the campaigns, I would think, are trying to raise money, determine who your volunteers are going to be, create some kind of organization, so that when 2022 gets here, you're in a position to get your message out.
Yeah, and then it really, really will see kind of a dash once we get later in the year and on into the next year. A lot going on in Washington. Put the campaign aside for now. But first off, I don't think we've talked since the Fauci emails really came to light that, you know, that you're starting to hear some buzz. People are much more willing to step out and criticize the pandemic czar, whatever you want to call him. What has been your general feeling about where that situation is headed?
He has told one group of people in his emails one thing, and he's told the American people another, a different thing. I don't know which of those two things are right in each instance in which he has done that, but the bottom line is he has lost credibility with the American public as a consequence, and we should remove him from the position that he holds.
Yeah, well, I mean, and there's a lot of that. You're finding that really is picking up some momentum right now. But I guess it shouldn't be a surprise. The Biden administration's like, no, we're not going to give you that. We're not going to give we're not going to give you guys a political win there on the other side of the aisle.
Should not be about who's going to win or who's going to lose. The bottom line is, when you have a person that is in that kind of position that affects the life and death of so many Americans, that person has to have credibility, because that person is going to be giving advice and counsel to Americans on how to conduct themselves, not only during the remnants of the COVID-19 pandemic, but with respect to whatever the new next health threat may be. And Dr. Fauci he's failing in the credibility score.
Congressman, another component of this pandemic, the communist Chinese role in it and getting them to pony up, pay some kind of restitution or whatever. You got an effort I see here you rolled out yesterday. I guess maybe perhaps this is the appeal of this effort, is that it's simple. It just kind of states what it wants to see and what it does, and it doesn't get too far into the weeds.
Well, what this legislation does, if Nancy Pelosi will let it come up for a floor vote, I believe it will pass. It forces communist China to pay America for the damages we have suffered because of China's wrongful conduct in either creating COVID-19 or failing to secure it in a proper containment area at the Wuhan bioweapons lab, or lying about it, causing not only the United States, but the world to be lulled into a false sense of security. Yeah, I don't know if you remember early on, Jeff, they were telling us that it was not communicable from person to person, not to worry about it. And that delayed our response somewhat because some of our healthcare leaders believe that. China also shut down some travel within China, but still let people from infected areas travel around the globe, thereby distributing COVID-19 much faster than it otherwise would have been distributed when time is of the essence, because it does take time to create a vaccine. And the longer that threat takes to infect a nation, the greater the chance that you'll have that vaccine ready when COVID-19 gets here. But that's not what China did. If this were in a court of law in the United States of America, absolutely, the Communist Chinese Party, the People's Republic of China, they would be liable for every penny of the trillions of dollars that the federal government has had to spend, every penny of the losses incurred at the city, county, state level, every penny of losses incurred by American businesses, and every penny of pain and suffering and loss of life to Americans as individuals. And so that's what this legislation reflects. China, pay up. If you don't, there'll be adverse consequences. You won't like them.
Congressman, the reluctance to adopt such a strong tack, whenever you know, Donald Trump would bring up that we need to hold China accountable, or anytime you would even associate mainland China with COVID-19, there was a, you know, the Democrats would play it as some kind of racial thing. But I think, you know, what the fear for a lot of these guys, a lot of your colleagues, would this would have a, you know, it would have consequences, and the U.S. economy's so so tied in with the Chinese. If we really were to try to hold these guys accountable, should we be concerned about the potential for an economic fallout here since we're so tied into China?
Right now, we are hemorrhaging over $400 billion a year of American wealth to communist China. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the economic multiplier effect, but if that money were to stay in America, it keeps changing hands. Okay, that's the multiplier effect. Instead of it enriching people at the first level, then the second level, then the third level in the United States of America, it's enriching people in communist China. So, quite frankly, the less trade we have with China, the less importation of Chinese goods we have, I should be more specific, then the less money that is hemorrhaging from the American economy to the Chinese economy, that's more money that is staying in America, and that is more money that is benefiting Americans rather than communist Chinese.
Yeah, but this would have to be, I guess, a slow process, right? Because you could just...
It is a slow process.
Yeah, turning...
It's a 10% tariff added on per year until such time as all of the legal obligations of the communist Chinese regime have been paid in full to all American governments, all American businesses, and all American citizens. So the first year, the tariff is 10%, second year, 20%, third year, 30%, on and on until the Chinese decide on their own that the economic consequences of their conduct does not warrant the position that they hold, and instead they start compensating Americans for the damages that the communist Chinese have either willfully or negligently or recklessly caused. I mean, who should bear the burden of these losses is what it comes down to. Should it be the innocent victims in America, or should it be the perpetrators of wrongful conduct, i.e. the Communist Chinese Party and everybody else in the People's Republic of China? I believe it's China who should be held responsible. That's what this legislation ultimately does.
Joined by Congressman Bo Brooks, candidate for U.S. Senate here in Alabama, here on the program. Congressman, let's move on to something that's really, really, to my surprise, become the hot-button topic here statewide. This idea that critical race theory, and I know especially you've been aware of this for a while because it seemed to be some tenets of this being a show or on display over at Redstone Arsenal up in your district, But the now seems to be the time when a lot of policymakers, a lot of people on the Republican side of the aisle are looking really closely at what is being taught in our schools. And this critical race theory topic has come up, the 1619 Project, things of that sort. You know, is it? There's some things you're going to be able to do at the federal level. Obviously, you don't want this in the military. But it does look like states are starting to, these state legislatures are starting to recognize this and starting to push back against some of these philosophies.
Well, unfortunately, if you saw the hearings yesterday, it is in our military. And what your listeners need to understand about critical race theory, and I'm going to abbreviate it, summarize it somewhat, is this. First, it's Marxist. Second, it promotes racism. It teaches people to discriminate against each other based on their skin pigmentation. That is wrong. It tries to divide Americans based strictly on skin pigmentation, calling one group the oppressor class, the other group the oppressed class, and recommends that the so-called oppressed class, again, based strictly on skin pigmentation, not on wealth, not on job status or anything else that might be merit-based, but strictly race-based, and it encourages the so-called oppressed race to rise up and do what is necessary to eliminate the oppressing race, and that is racial division of the worst kind. And it's also, you know, anytime you use a broad brush like this, where you condemn one group of people solely because of their skin pigmentation and you elevate another group of people solely because of their skin pigmentation, that's wrong. Because in America, you've got people of all ethnicities, all skin pigmentations that are in all segments of life, okay? Wealthy, middle class, poor, president of the United States senators, congressmen, governors. We don't divide ourselves based on race or ethnicity as evidence by economic activity and how well different people are doing regardless of race. But critical race theory punches that right in the nose. It eliminates the idea that you can achieve a lot in America if you'll just seize the opportunities you have with the God-given talents that you've been blessed with.
And the thing is, I don't think people are as, you know, they don't mind having the discussions. But when you start talking about what the solution ought to be to this disprove, I mean not disproven but unproven theory, probably disproven in many regards, but that you know, if you acknowledge what they want you to, these critical race theorists want you to, then their solutions are, like you say, they get into the realm of Marxism and you know, where we have not equality of opportunity but equality of outcome, and then some even.
Well, that is one of the long-term effects of Marxism. Basically, with Marxism or socialism, communism, whatever you want to call it, your society is broken into two classes. One is the master class, that is the political party that is in power, the Communist Party typically, and then everybody else in that society is dictated to and told how to conduct themselves, where to work, what to produce, how much that they're going to be able to get paid, where they're going to live. And so in effect, I'll use Communist China as an example, you've got roughly 10% of the Communist Chinese population that is a member of the Communist Chinese Party, and then the other 90% consist of slaves who must do what the ruling class says or risk forfeiting a place to live, risk forfeiting even their lives. We don't want to go there, but that's the essence of Marxism. If you happen to be in the Communist Party, you're in pretty good shape, but everybody else is a slave of the Communist Party.
Finally, Congressman, just a couple more minutes here before we have to let you go. Joe Biden's speech yesterday pretty much boilerplate gun control. We've heard it all before. But it occurs to me the Democrats really take they approach guns in this country as if it's not a right but a privilege, and that they want to regulate it. why do we ever hear Democrats just say, why don't we repeal the Second Amendment?
Well, that's their game plan, and they intend on repealing the Second Amendment a little bit at a time. They hope to deprive enough people of the right to bear arms such that there's not so much support for the Second Amendment. The Socialist Democrats are pretty clever in that regard. They don't want the general public to know what their end game is. They want to achieve progress, as socialists see it, incrementally, a little bit at a time. But let me tell you what the best answer to the violence that we see and with the rising crime rates is: to create opportunity in America. The kind of opportunity that I saw when I was younger, in my teens and 20s, when you could succeed with your hands, you could succeed with your intellect, depending on, again, what your God-given talents might be. And one of the biggest oppressors of opportunity in the United States of America is this open borders mantra that the United States Chamber of Commerce and the Democrats repeat on a regular basis. And when you have a huge surge in the labor supply, particularly cheap foreign labor, then you're looking at it becoming much more hopeless for young men in particular, but also young women, as they try to make their way in the job market. And even when they get jobs, they're not as good as they might otherwise be, and the pay is not as much as it otherwise would be. And so a lot of these people resort to criminal activity because they perceive that that is their best hope for quote-unquote success. That's not the way it used to be, but that is the way it is now, because you've got such strong interest on those that want to hire cheap labor, and they're political Bahamas. I mean, they're 800-pound gorillas, and they spend tens of millions of dollars a year impacting elections in order to ensure that they have that cheap labor supply coming in rather than having to pay market wages for what Americans would demand.
Guys, we got to leave it there. Real quick, folks want to check out you, your campaign, or anything like that, tell them where to look.
Well, I'd love everybody's help. If you want a fighting conservative in the United States Senate, go to mobrooks.com, mobrooks.com, mobrooks.com. Sign up as a volunteer. If you're of a mind to, if you're so motivated, make a contribution.
Carson, we've got to leave it there. Thanks for coming on. We do appreciate it.
Thank you. Take care.
That is Congressman Mo Brooks running for U.S. Senate. Let's get a break in here. This is the Jeff Poole Show on FM Talk 106.5.